You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Today on the Soda Pod, we're going to jump right into the Hoppy Hour featuring our friend Dave Infante, business and beer insider. We'll talk a little NHL Wild, but the biggest thing on this episode is Hoppy and I are going to talk about a potential, potentially in our dreams, an NCAA and CHL matchup proposed by our friends at Everything College Hockey. All that and more in episode 204 of the Soda Pod. Let's go. From the wild woods of Vancouver Island, welcome to the Soda Pod. Isha Droma here alongside the State of Hoppy, and thank you for joining us wherever and whenever you are listening. Hoppy, how's it going, man? How was your weekend?
Weekend was a bit of a chore. Went out to a wedding for a relative out in, we'll just say, rural Minnesota, and farm boys can drink. So I'm a little bit in recovery mode, but we're gonna be okay.
Shout out Liquid IV.
Shout out to Liquid IV.
I'll say this: I learned to drink in Alberta. I started drinking on the island, but it was really for me the cowboys in Alberta, the country boys, and girls. Actually, to be perfectly honest, they're the ones that really they taught me all that I know. And coming back here, I've gone a little soft, but. Let's just say university had nothing on just a normal Friday night with your peers in Alberta.
That's so weird to me. But there's very different kinds of drinking too. It's not even necessarily that, like, you know, rural drinking is tougher drinking. There's just a different pace to it. They just go about it differently.
Quickly want to remind everyone to check out the Brewery Travels podcast every Thursday. Subscribe to the feed, the Brewery Travels podcast. Speaking of our friends who aren't huge beer fans. Anyways, our friend on Twitter at Caprizov with two V's, not liking the beer stuff. So just for him, this episode, of course, is going to be a beer heavy episode. Look, man, I know you've been taking a step back from listening to the Soda Pod lately. If you're listening to this right now, just stop the tape. You know, just click pause, go back and listen to our last few episodes as they've been very much Minnesota Vikings heavy. And then, you know, maybe take a break for this episode and the next one as we got Lupulin Brewing coming on our next episode too. But I do promise you a lot of hockey content coming out this season under the Soda Pod banner. And we appreciate your past support anyways at Caprizov.
And to be clear, Isha, we got to let them know it's not next episode. Next episode is Wednesday, so Friday is the episode that we just want you to skip over because that there will be very, very loophole.
Well, I mean, skip Wednesday while you're at it too, because we ain't talking hockey on that episode anyways. Reminder to everyone else, hit us up on Twitter and Facebook if you haven't already, at The Soda Pod. We're totally interactive and love connecting with all of our listeners and fellow hockey, sports, and beer fans. You can leave us a text or voicemail at 612-324-1684. And the Hockey Podcast Network and The Soda Pod are proudly powered by DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports. Use promo code THPN upon sign up for a bonus. And if you're a regular user, plug that promo code in for a weekly deal. Hell, if you're a regular user, plug in the promo code TPPN, as our Pigskin Podcast Network just got a sponsorship, just partnered with DraftKings as well. And we really appreciate anyone to throw that promo code in if you're a regular user, or even a sign-up bonus, as we really want to ramp that up and show DraftKings how much our networks here at Maze Media Labs love that partnership. So again, TPPN, THPN, if you want to throw us some love on DraftKings, the daily fantasy app. All right, Hoppy, on the other side, because we're not drinking beer on this recording right now. I got a coffee in hand. You've got the liquid IV. We're going to throw in our Hoppy Hour segment that we had already taped with our friend Dave Infante. Again, beer and business beat for Vine Pair and editor-in-chief of his own publication, Fingers. Highly recommend everyone to go check that out. It was super fun catching up with Dave. So on the other side, we'll talk a little business, we'll talk a little beer, we'll talk a little hockey as well here on episode 204 of The Soda Pod.
First, I'd like to propose a toast to UMD goaltender Alex Stalock. To Stalock!
To Stalock!
I love that stuff. Been drinking it for years. You know, I heard they recently decided to add more hops to it.
Well, you're all hopped out?
Dave Infante, beer and business beat for Vine Pair and editor-in-chief of Fingers. What's happening, Dave? Glad to have you back on.
We're back, baby. How's it going, guys? How's Minnesota? What is it, like 20 below up there? It's September now, so I assume you guys are inside for the winter. What's the deal?
That's pretty much it. You nailed it.
Hoppy's probably still in shorts, though.
That's right.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you a shorts and flip-flops sicko, like in the dead of winter?
Yeah, so the rule in the household from the wife is as soon as there's like visible snow that sticks, I'm not allowed to wear shorts or sandals in public.
How has that caused marital strife or what?
No, I mean, I'm glad that like that was as far as she pushed it. I was really worried, like going into marriage, like shit, what does this mean for comfortability when I want to leave the home? Yeah. And she was on board for the snow rule. I'm like, this is incredible. Like sometimes it doesn't snow until the middle of December. It'll stop snowing and snow doesn't stick like beginning of March. Like that's a pretty okay window for me to not wear shorts outside.
I see. So you feel like you got a good deal.
Well, I know. I feel like I got an incredible deal if a deal was to be made, right? I could be an asshole. I could be an asshole and be like, oh, this is bullshit. Let me wear what I want. But no, I feel like that's a pretty reasonable. And I mean, let's be real. If there's snow on the ground, I'm usually not inclined to wear shorts anyways. But it's nice to have the option, right?
It's nice to have the option. Yeah. we have so little in this life, you know. You have to take pleasure in the small things.
No, absolutely. And I mean, and those small things is bringing on Dave on the podcast here for another segment. Before we dive into one of your latest stories that's got a ton of traction and is, well, very near and dear to Minnesota, it actually builds off the story that you talked about when you came on last time. Let's make the rounds. What are we drinking here, gentlemen? Dave, we'll start with you. If you don't got a cold one on tap, what have you been drinking? And there you go.
This is I'm drinking just a seltzer tonight because I'm working hard. I'm burning the midnight oil. I'm actually probably gonna keep writing after I get off the phone with you guys, or off the pod here with you guys. But lately, tonight notwithstanding, I've been drinking a lot of tequila soda because I'm a little bit I'm a husky fellow, you know. I'm a stocky. My mom would like buy the Wrangler stocky size as a kid, you know. I'm a built gentleman. I've got my wedding coming up in about a month, so I'm trying to slim down.
Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. I'm trying to slim down, so tequila and just soda with a little bit of lime is my sort of low calorie option. I've never really been huge into hard seltzer personally. It's just not my preference. So tequila soda is a good kind of move for me. But yeah, not doing that tonight because I have to be clear of mind to hit a deadline, but that is typically what I've been drinking lately. What about you guys?
Well, Dave, I got to interject. Are you a fan of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the show?
Of course.
It's an incredible show. Who wouldn't watch that? Isha, you motherfucker.
I haven't seen it yet. I have nothing against it.
Just what do you mean you haven't? What do you
if you haven't seen it yet, that means you have something against it with how long it's been on.
Look,
you've been
avoiding it. I just got through Parks and Rec this year, guys. So the reason
I asked that question, Dave, we're just gonna ignore the peasant who refuses to watch it. As soon as you get to Minnesota, I'm gonna fucking jam Always Sunny down your throat.
Okay.
So, Dave, the reason I ask is because when Mac decided he was going to, we'll be delicate in saying he bulked, he did some bulking.
He cultivated mass.
Yeah, he cultivated mass. When he decided he was going to lose all of that weight in like 3 months, no problem. Obviously, he had a very rigorous workout routine, but all he did was drink tequila.
Is that right? This is in real life, you are on the Mac diet.
This is in real life. Rob McElhenney or whatever his name is.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. That's how he literally lost all that weight and was like fucking jacked in like 3 months.
That brings a number of things I have in common with him up to one from zero. I'm in good company. What are you guys drinking now?
I've got on tap a Tragically Hip Lake Fever Lager out of Big Rock Brewing at actually Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I had the pleasure of actually visiting Big Rock when I lived there right out of high school for a few years. It was an up and coming brewery at the time, not too big. They barely had a tap room. It was more of a restaurant before even the tap rooms were even a thing, and they, you know, serve you beer as well. There was a whole like separate building for it as well, just on the property. Now apparently it's one massive facility and they're just doing unbelievable work there. Always been a fan of Big Rock. I've never had anything that I've disliked from there. Kept it simple with the lagers, but we had some actually friends on our last podcast episode, Dave, from Kingston, Ontario, which is the home of Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip. And I didn't even know that going into it when I cracked this beer on that podcast. So it was so good. I had to bring it here as well, boys.
Right on.
Hoppy, what are you sipping on?
Oh, sorry. I'm still like finishing the last bit. We came from another recording. Just toppled off the delicious bottle of Northland vodka from our good friend Mark Parrish. But getting towards the end of it. So there will probably be a refill coming in the near future of something else because that's empty. So we'll see what happens. Live dangerously.
I'm living vicariously through you guys. Enjoy.
You know, after the honeymoon, you know, when all the craziness dies down and we bring back Dave, well, we bring him back on the podcast. We'll expect him to dive into the hops with us once more. But cheers, fellas, and again, congrats, Dave, on your wedding coming up and the engagement, the whole nine yards. Let's dive into your latest article now. And I've read it. We've shared it. We encourage everyone to go and check it out as well on Fingers. But basically, let's walk through it and maybe pull the curtain back on your time reporting on it. But let's start first with, again, I know it connects with the topic of which you were here to speak about the first time on last year on the Soda Pod. But for our listeners who didn't hear you on the Soda Pod before, tell us about your early reporting on the workforce at Surly Brewing.
Yeah, sure thing. So last August or so, I got on this story at Surly Brewing, which is one of the biggest craft breweries in the country. It's a OG in Minnesota craft beer, very influential in the state. And workers at their beer hall, which is kind of like their tap room, but it's, if you've ever been to the Surly facility, it's like a campus over there, and the beer hall is a really beautiful, restaurant facility with awesome seating and all sorts of cool shit going on. So it's more than just a taproom, in other words. But workers there had launched a union drive because they wanted to unionize their workplace because they, at the time, COVID was in what is now, I guess we refer to as the first wave, or I guess that would have been the second wave at that point. We were just coming into the second wave. And they had sort of spent the summer unsatisfied or alarmed by their employer's, you know, protocols with regards to COVID, and they were frustrated with their pay and health benefits and some other things. So they came together and organized a union, and, you know, were asking for voluntary recognition from their employer. Now, they didn't end up winning. They didn't get voluntary recognition, which employers don't have to grant voluntary recognition of a union, even though you have a federally protected right as a worker to organize a union. Your employer can stall and say, no, I don't believe that, you know, the majority of you actually want this, even though you've signed cards saying so. So I'm going to force a vote with the National Labor Relations Board. So that's what the Surly leadership did. And it came down to it. It was a heartbreaker. The Surly pro-union workers lost by a single vote. That's the people who showed up to vote. You know, the way it works is you count the votes that are cast. And basically, if all of the workers got to vote the way they wanted to, which was by mail at first, you know, it was later shifted to an in-person vote. Anyway, the long and the short of it was that they came up one vote short. So they lost that drive. That said, in the time since that happened, and even prior to it for a couple months prior, there's been an incredible amount of momentum in the craft beverage community, the craft beverage business in the Twin Cities. The craft distilleries in Minneapolis and St. Paul have really been leading the charge in terms of unionizing their workforces. The workers at these individual craft distilleries have been unionizing with the local of Unite Here, which is a national union, hospitality union. And there's a lot of energy in Twin Cities right now when it comes to craft beverage labor movement.
Yeah, and that's what your story, I think, highlighted the most. Now, in your latest piece, which we'll dive into, you know, head on now that there's some context there with Surly, it all starts with DuNord Social Spirits, does it not?
So DuNord it starts way before DuNord.
Really?
So the first distillery in Minneapolis and St. Paul to go public with a union drive was Tattersall Distilling.
Oh, okay.
And that would have been in June of 2020. And so basically what happened there is, you know, they had been sort of, like I said, similar to Surly, they'd been frustrated by the COVID protocols. They, weren't satisfied with their employer's response to the pandemic, weren't satisfied with their employer's response to the George Floyd protests. That's a situation that labor organizers refer to as a hot shop. And so it's sort of, you can kind of intuit what that means. Basically, all the workers are pissed off about the same thing and are itching to take some sort of action, right? Like they're mad at the boss, they're mad at the conditions in the workplace, they think they're getting screwed. And so what happens often in that case, and it happened at Tattersall, is either someone picks up the phone and calls someone who knows someone at a union, or the opposite happens and a buddy says, hey, I know some people who work over here, they're really pissed, you work at a union, you should get in touch. I'm not sure which direction it went for Tattersall, but regardless, over a very short amount of time, the reports say that it was about 9 days, which, you know, is a very, very short period to organize a union, but Tattersall workers were all really behind this. We're the overwhelming majority were behind it and got their act together, got organized very quickly, and went public with a union drive in June of 2020, if I'm not mistaken. And so from there, the Twin Cities has seen, I think the count is at 7 or 8 at this point, distilleries and breweries and a coffee shop, Spy House, that have gone public with union drives since then.
So
and, t- sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to tell us just more about the union drives and what they entail. Because in your article, you said that overall they've won more than they've lost, and it's more of like a vibe of citywide solidarity that everyone's going to work together, you know, to try to move the needle statewide.
Yeah. So, you know, the workers that I spoke to when on the Surly drive and then on the Spy House Coffee drive, which was another one of the two losses in this handful. You know, the point that they made was that, you know, a lot of them had never organized before. They had no idea how unions worked. This was a crash course, not only in organizing, but just really in basic education about, you know, the way organized labor works in this country. And, you know, I don't want to get too like tin hat on you guys or tinfoil hat on you guys, but, there are reasons for that. Like, growing up in the U.S., like, you're not educated, you know, labor history is not well taught in schools. You know, right to work laws have really eroded the gains that labor made through the first half of the 20th century. I've organized before in my workplace, and, you know, what you encounter a lot is people not even understanding what a union is and can do, right? And so that's a big challenge for organizers, whether it's in the craft beverage space or any industry, is to just get through to workers about the basic fundamentals of what this thing is before you even start talking about, do you want this and should we, you know, should we work towards this?
Huh. And like, it's funny that you bring that up though, Dave, because like, you're spot on that there's like no education on it. Like, it's almost the opposite of the quicksand debacle, right? Like, I spent so much of my life terrified that my death and my demise was going to come via quicksand because like people pumped it up. I was in all the cartoons and I thought this was a real thing. Whereas like, whenever you saw anything about like strikes or unions or stuff growing up, like there really wasn't much coverage to it. Like, you never really saw much coverage. And like, as I got into the workforce, it's like, I've never really come across this. This seems rather fake when it's actually quite real.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And like, again, like, I don't want to make this sound any more like a conspiracy theory than, you know, kind of it is. The reality is, over the course of the past 50 to, let's call it 60 years in this country, labor has been sort of systematically dismantled, right? Dating back to when Reagan broke the PATCO strike of the air traffic controllers and showed that, you know, the federal government wasn't behind labor and would actually take an adversarial position towards labor. You know, ever since then, it's been on a slide, right? Union membership nationwide is declining and has been since the 70s. Right to work legislation has been passed in, I think, 29 states, and many of the rest of the states are trying to pass that right to work legislation. And for the listeners who don't know what that is, it's not what it sounds like. It's packaged to make it sound like it's a good thing, right? Like, I need a job, I should have a right to work. What it actually means is that because of lobbying by right-wing organizations and conservative think tanks and the politicians that, you know, carry out their policy, they have kind of spun this idea that union membership is an unfair imposition on an individual worker's right to free speech. So it's a First Amendment violation because unions make political contributions. So the idea was, you know, if we can make this into a free speech issue and make it so anyone who doesn't want to be represented by the union doesn't have to pay dues to the union, but still gets all the benefits of being in a unionized workplace, then you cut off unions from their access to funds, right? I mean, unions raise dues, but if you give people, if you give workers the opportunity to free ride on a union, unfortunately, there's some percentage of workers that are going to take that. So anyway, right to work legislation has undermined power of labor. There's a bunch of other things. I know this isn't a labor podcast. It's mostly a hockey podcast, so I won't get too much further into it. But
no, we love it, though. That's why we brought you on.
But yeah, so the point is that, you know, you don't learn about this stuff. There's a lot of education that has to go on. And it's a vicious cycle, right? Because as you lose dues from declining union membership, necessarily what you'd want to do is organize to replace those members with new members at new workplaces, but you don't have the funds to hire organizers to help with the organizing. So then you lose more people, and then you lose more ability to pay organizers, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm actually, for example, I'm working on a piece right now. I just spoke with a guy who's on a picket line in Bardstown, Kentucky. Heaven Hill Distillery is one of the biggest bourbon producers in the country. And 420 of their production workers, yeah, there you go. 420 of their production workers just went on strike as of 12 a.m. last Saturday morning.
Oh, wow.
Over a contract dispute, because the company isn't, they say isn't bargaining in good faith with them over key contract disagreements. Now, the point I bring up, I mean, I'll have a piece about that and probably publish it in the next couple of days, and there'll be more detail in it. But just briefly, like with regards to Hoppy's point, how much have you heard about that, right? You might have picked up a little bit of chatter on Twitter if you're kind of in labor Twitter, and you can, you have people that you follow who are surfacing that stuff. But mainstream coverage of it in the media has been very minimal, and probably will be for the foreseeable future. I mean, a couple months ago, and I think it's actually still going on, there's a 1,000 worker strike at the Warrior Met mine facility in Alabama. And only, because of the hard work of a couple of journalists, one of whom is Kim Kelly, who I'm pals with, and she's been down to cover that situation. Only finally, after months and months of this strike, has it like finally kind of gotten into the mainstream media sort of groundwater, and now is a little bit more of a story. Mainstream media doesn't often cover labor issues. It's not, it hasn't traditionally been a beat. That's certainly changed over the course of the past, 5 to 10 years or so, but it's slow going. And, I don't know if you guys have heard, but media is also a colossal shit show. So it's not like there's enormous funds to pay labor reporters to go out
and cover. Yeah. It's not a sexy beat there.
No, it's not, but it's a really important one. And so you wind up, and not to pat myself on the back here, I'm certainly not the only one who's doing it, but a lot of these stories tend to get picked up by independent journalists who have an interest in it, or have been laid off from a publication, or trying to kind of like carve out a living on their own type of thing. And these stories are out there, and there are journalists working hard to tell them, but at the major outlets, it's not something that you're going to see a lot of until it becomes too big to ignore.
No, yeah. And I mean, you do great work with that, Dave, which is why we love talking to you about it. And, I've been reading your stuff since we first connected, and especially on the beer stuff, but, on the business stuff too. It's totally interesting. And you're right. It is the independents who are going to bring that to light, because you mentioned it. Our media is, it's fucked, for a lack of a better term. And I'm in it. I work in it. I run podcast networks. So I understand totally what you mean there. Going back to, I don't want to even call it the conspiracy, but the way that, government policy is kind of making it harder for people to unionize, or even understand the fundamentals of a union. Explain the dream job paradox, because I found this really interesting in your article. And the first thing I heard of was hipster millennial dream.
Yeah, sure. No,
especially at a brewery. I mean, if you look at the types who work there.
Yeah. So this is the thing, right? So the concept of the dream job paradox is basically that everyone wants, certainly the stereotype is that millennials want meaning from their work, right? They want to have careers that are not only well-paying, but also fulfilling, that align with their values, and are in cities that are walkable and have, progressive politics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? It's kind of like this greatest hits of all the tired tropes about millennials. But there is something to it in this capacity. And this is not something I came up with on my own. Like, there's been a lot of good writing on this about, a lot of these jobs that seem cool or seem kind of sexy, or have a lot of like social capital, is what you'll hear academics call it. They have a lot of cachet. The way I like to think about that is, like, if you're at a hypothetical cocktail party and someone asks you, "Oh, what do you do?" and you get to say, "Oh, I work at a brewery. I'm a craft beer brewer, or I'm a columnist for, you know, the New Yorker, or I'm a, I grow medical cannabis, right? Things that have interesting stories behind them, right, or that, you know, that seem like they have interesting connections to manufacturing culture or manufacturing products that people like, or, you know, having jobs that aren't nameless, faceless, thankless, you know, quote unquote office jobs, right? But because so many people are working towards jobs like that and see those as the ideal, see those as the dream job, those people who get those jobs, quite often, you know, they find after working them for a while, and I would put media in this, you know, or at least like the side of media that I'm in, I would put it in that bucket. You know, you start working that job and you've worked really hard to get there, and you kind of realize like, wait, there's a lot of shit that sucks about this job, just like any other. Right. But because you feel very privileged to be able to do the job, and you're like, man, I know I'm really lucky to be able to do this. I'm really lucky to make a living as a writer. I'm really lucky to be able to brew beer in this city that I love, you know, being in. And other people, my friends, my peers, they think I'm cool and they think my job is cool. You're nervous to lose it, right? You don't want to rock the boat too much, because you think you ultimately have it better than other people. You have it better than your friend who's an accountant who, you know, clocks in at 9, clocks out at 5, and has no interesting stories at the end of the day. And so there's always kind of this, you know, sort of specter of being replaceable kind of looming over your shoulder, where it's like, man, if I complain too much about this gig, like, there are a lot of people who, you know, who would happily take it from me. You know, who's gonna believe a craft beer brewer? He gets to brew beer all day. He says that job's no good. I'll take his job, right? Like, that's certainly part of the conversation and consideration when workers in these fields, these culture manufacturing fields, or these, you know, popular product manufacturing fields, start thinking about dissatisfaction at work. It's like, well, shit, man, like, if I'm not happy here, like, maybe I shouldn't say anything, because, you know, this is a dream job and I'm supposed to be really, you know, enjoying it and stoked about it.
Yeah. And I just found that piece in your article so interesting. And it's so true, especially, and I mean, this is a little biased as I live in Western Canada, but especially out of the universities here and the political clouds that have on both extreme sides, you know, the ultra left and the ultra right, that are just pumping narratives into these young minds and young students on like where to take their careers. And I feel like that paradox is prevalent on both sides. So that's why me personally, when I read that, I was like, wow, that's so true, especially just where I live on the West Coast right now.
Yeah, so it's actually funny. Earlier this week, another distillery went public with their Union Drive in Minneapolis. So Just Us Whiskey, which is another craft distillery, they went public with their drive. I think there's roughly 40 people in the bargaining unit. And the management at that distillery chose to voluntarily recognize them. So that's a happy ending, right? Like, that means that, okay, now they are a union, and they have the right, well, they always had the right to be represented by a union in collective bargaining, but now that part of the process is concluded. And now what they'll do is they'll head towards contract negotiations. And contract negotiations are where a bunch of these unions that went public over the course of 2020 and 2021 are currently at in the process. So you mentioned Du Nord Social Spirits. They just began their contract negotiation. And this is a long drawn out process typically. I mean, especially for first contracts. And again, that is not unique to craft beverages. That's just the nature of organizing. The first contract is always the hardest. Labor organizers talk about this all the time, because you're kind of putting together a document almost from scratch, right? And a lot of the things that workers want. You know, certainly employers are not so willing to give up or are not so willing to concede on. There are things that employers want that the workers aren't willing to compromise on. So there's a lot of back and forth around contract negotiations, but eventually you hammer it out and then you have a contract in place. And then the typical period or the contract terms are 3 years. And so that contract will cover, you know, at these shops or at many of these shops will cover until, you know, 2024 or so. And then they, you know, the contract comes up for renewal and they do it again. So that's the status that a lot of these shops are at. But like I said, they're also still organizing. I mean, Just Us just went public with their drive. And my sources in the Twin Cities that I've spoken to, you know, express a commitment to not only sort of getting their contracts in place in their shops and, you know, taking care of their own house, so to speak, but they're also interested in doing education to their colleagues in other cities about what their union has done for them, how, you know, they built this labor movement in their industry in the Twin Cities, and then how they can, you know, how other craft beverage workers in other places can take those learnings, can take those insights and apply them to their own workplaces, right? So that's kind of the next step. I mean, and it's the sort of thing where they have to do both things at once. But I mean, you know, they have to take care of what's going on at home. And they also, you know, if the movement's going to succeed and become bigger and ultimately serve workers in the way that they hope it will, they need to be able to cover more of the industry. Because one thing we know about the hospitality space, about the F&B space, of which, you know, craft distilleries and craft breweries are kind of a part, is those people move around. Those workers will move from job to job. They're not always going to stay in the Twin Cities, right? Some of them will, but some of them, you know, their partner will move to California and they need to get a gig in California, right? Like the dream for these workers and for anyone in the labor movement, or for most people in the labor movement, I would guess, is no matter where you go in the country, your craft spirits are being distilled, are being produced, are being poured by union labor. And so no employer can get away with trying to break a union, trying to bust a union, because the whole industry is union. And that's a real sea change. It's not one that, you know, and what makes the Twin Cities labor movement so remarkable is that this is not an area that's seen a lot of organizing historically. I mean, this is really until very recently has been the purview of kind of like, you know, second career entrepreneur bros, kind of a lifestyle, you know, project hobby type of thing. I'm painting with a broad brush. There are certainly owners of these distilleries and breweries who don't fit that mold, but the culture is very much one of, you know, kind of like growing a business and not necessarily of, you know, how do we provide good, stable manufacturing jobs for workforces, you know, to build for the long term. And so that's the shift that they're trying to bring about in the Twin Cities. And they've, you know, they've laid the groundwork, guys. I mean, I don't, you know, there's no telling where it's going to go from here for sure. But having reported on organizing, you know, for whatever the past 5 years or so in this space, the Twin Cities movement that I've seen in the craft beverage industry is the real deal. Like they're really putting in the work. They're organizing consistently and aggressively. You know, they have really strong help from their local Unite Here, Local 17, is doing a great job making inroads in that community. And they're connected with the Democratic Socialists of America chapter in the Twin Cities. So there's, you know, sort of a political outlet for it as well. There's a lot of cross-pollination between those groups. Those are all keys to success. And so I'm really interested to see what happens. And I suspect, I mean, if I had to bet on it, I suspect that we're going to see that movement branch out to other parts of Minnesota and then the rest of the upper Midwest slowly but surely.
Oh, man. We always have time for beer and business talk here on the Soda Pod. Dave, this has been outstanding, brother, honestly. What I know you mentioned some of the articles that you have in the works right now. Anything else that you want to pump and promote here? And please tell our listeners where they can find you, both written works and on social media.
Yeah, thanks so much. I mean, I'll do the shameless plug here. Yeah, so like mentioned at the beginning, I publish an independent newsletter called Fingers. It's fingers.substack.com. It's a newsletter about drinking culture, being online and beyond. I do a lot of labor reporting. I do, coverage of the beer business. I do stupid blogs about how I should be White Claw's next marketing director. So it's a bunch of, it's a grab bag of everything, and it's a lot of fun. It's free to subscribe. It's fingers.substack.com. Check it out. Other than that, I write for VinePair. I publish a couple times a month at VinePair. I'm a contributing writer at large there. I've got a fun piece coming out about, I'll tease it, has hard seltzer killed the college keg party? So I did an investigation into that, and I spent a lot of time last month talking to college kids about what they drink, how they drink, whether they see kegs on campus.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, think about it, man. Like kegs of hard seltzer are just now rolling out to on-premise. So restaurants and bars, you can't, you could probably, if you called up your distributor, you could probably get a keg of Truly or a keg of White Claw, but it is certainly not common. It is not filtered down to retail. And so the question that I had for myself is, I'm 33 years old. I was in college 11 years ago at this point, and kegs were a big deal back then. You get a keg party, it means it's going to be a bigger party than just kind of like getting a bunch,
right,
a handful of cases. Right. And so I wanted to know, do kegs have that same cultural cachet that they once did? I don't want to spoil it, but it's a mixed bag. Definitely. There were kids that I talked to who were like, I've never seen a keg in my entire life. So I shake my head at those kids.
Yeah,
I know. I don't want to be like the fucking Simpsons, like old man yells at cloud type of thing. But
it's not that though. We're just encouraging them to drink beer upside down over a keg. Like, come on, right. Now, is that too much to ask?
Well, so you're right. Like the interesting thing is COVID kind of was a double whammy here because, kegs are really, on the spectrum of sanitation that college kids experience when they drink, I think kegs are pretty far to the unsanitary side of the spectrum.
It's like peanut bowl at the campus bar keg.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or beer pong cups that have been on the table for the last four rounds. Yeah.
My God. Everybody's sipping from them.
See, you can shake your head at this cachet, Dave, but I'd say 90% of the times that I've played beer pong, I did not put beer in the cups because
I don't blame. No,
it's just pretty fucking gross.
I have no judgment on that. Even the idea of a water cup and you dunk the ball in it real quick, but you're not changing the water. So it's just getting dunked in this slurry of hair and dirt and whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I look back on those times fondly, but I try not to think about it too much because it gets
our immune systems were in their prime, gentlemen. Yeah. We're still here talking about it today.
That's why we're getting through COVID right now, by the way.
That's right.
Between that and partying at Big Island, I've got it covered. I have all the immunities possible. Oh man.
But yeah, no. So that's what I got going on, and I always appreciate you guys bringing me on. I love chatting with you guys. I got to we missed the opportunity to. I don't know if you guys covered it, but this fucking Coors Light. Oh, can I swear? I can swear.
Here, yeah, right? Please do.
Yeah. I don't know if you caught this, but Coors Light did a champion's ice beer where they melted down some of the Tampa Bay Lightning ice. And used it to brew some Coors Light beer.
No way.
Yeah, it was like a very limited run. The copy says, in honor of the Tampa Bay Lightning winning back-to-back championships, we took the actual ice they skated on and made a limited edition beer with it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. So I think it's long since been, I'm sure they did just a very short novelty run.
Yeah.
But I saw that and I was on vacation, but I was like, I got to talk to the fucking Soda Pod guys. I feel like
I can't believe we missed it.
You didn't have
I'm guessing it probably wasn't distributed to either no, of our yeah, locations.
I don't think it made it out of like the greater Tampa area. But you know, next time I'll be sure your soda pod beer correspondent will be sure to ring the alarm bell, and we'll do an emergency pod about that.
Dude, nice. That would be unreal. And again, Dave, anytime you wanna pump anything beer related in or outside the Twin Cities. I mean, hey, I'm all the way here on the West Coast, and I still pump our beer here on the podcast. So the keys to the castle are yours. Just like how you said, hey, I'd love to talk about this article. I mean, jump on anytime, man. Seriously.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for having me, guys.
Week 2 of football is in the books, and now it's time to review the tape and get ready for Week 3 with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sportsbook betting partner of the NFL. To kick off another action-packed week, DraftKings is giving new customers $150 instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any Week 3 game to receive $150 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook is not yet available in your state or province, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN to receive $150 in free bets when you place $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply, see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Thanks to Dave Infante again. Man, that guy's so much fun to connect with.
Yeah, he's shit. Not only a great writer, but he can talk us under the table too.
Big, big Coors fans here on the Soda Pod. Upon reflection, I remembered that story. But when we were talking about him, I was like, oh, this is news to me. And straight up, like, Dylan was in the other room. He's like, dude, we talked about that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure we even talked about that on the Soda Pod. It just feels like ages ago as well. We are in September now, and the end of last hockey season, you know, like I said, feels like a long time ago, man. Jones in for some hockey, which is right around the corner, and we'll talk a little bit about some hockey tidbits here. Where do you want to start?
For hockey, huh? I guess we got to start with what everyone seems to be excited about here, the prospect games against the Blackhawks, which doesn't it just make it better that it's the Blackhawks that we get to beat up on?
Oh, yeah, and it was a fiery game. Your boy Addison got in a little tussle.
Yeah, that was kind of a fight. It was okay. But, I mean, everyone got what they wanted. The three goals that were scored by the Wild, you saw the names that you were looking for, right? Like, we got Boldy, Rossi. Addison, Rossi, Beckman. They're all on the score sheet, and that's all anyone cares about right now. And it's great that all the videos circulating and people are, like, again, it's a good reason to be excited amidst this period where we just have no idea if or when Kaprizov's joining the team. So, hey, at least we got something in the tank here. But now today's game, which they're partway through, we're recording this on Sunday afternoon, right before the Vikings game, because, yep, I'm going to be dialed in. But Boldy, two goals. Rossi putting up big, big moments too. Like, he's drawing penalties. He's setting up some of these goals. I know he stepped up and laid someone out, apparently. I don't know. I haven't watched any of the game, but it's just good reason for optimism. And again, for Rossi in particular, there's going to be a learning curve for sure jumping into the NHL, but I'm thrilled that he's actually out and playing and seems largely like he's getting back to his game, right? Because we didn't know what what to expect coming off of a full year layoff.
No, yeah, it's super exciting. And it's exciting that the media is getting hyped on him as well. Like, we're seeing Jesse Pierce, we're seeing Russo all being like, damn, this guy's got wheels. And you never really know until you're there at the ice to appreciate how fast a player is. Seeing those comments come out about Rossi in particular, it's really exciting that he hasn't lost a step in one of the most important areas in the National Hockey League game today, which is speed. How he pairs out, how he matches up against other elite skill, I mean, that's obviously what we want to see, but, you know, baby steps, and I'm confident, a little bit more confident than I was when he first started training camp, hearing the great news and the positive reviews about his play thus far.
For sure. And I mean, looking over to you, Isha, there was kind of some good and kind of some, oh no, not so good. Dylan Gunther, oh my goodness. That was a fucking missile.
Yeah, he looks good.
He's
going to be good.
Anyone that doesn't know, that there was a video circulating from, was that prospect games for them too? Or what was
I
that
believe
from?
So. Either prospect game or like in like a competitive scrimmage of some sort.
Yeah, I can't even believe he fell that far.
Man, what power this guy has in that shot. That's insane.
Man.
Yeah.
So, we'll see in a couple of years if they made the right move. Because obviously, I mean, shit had to happen. A move had to be made. I don't question necessarily that Benning did it. It just hurts when you're already seeing how good this prospect could be.
Yeah, the thing is, he wasn't going to be playing on the top line or even the second line next to Bo Horvat this year anyways, and that's what Jim Benning needed first and foremost, which is, in my opinion, Garland was what this trade was really meant to bring in, which was to give, finally, a legit top six winger to Bo Horvat, because he only can play with Pearson so much. And the guy, there's so much more potential for him as a center, actually setting up play, but Bo Horvat's been, he hasn't had the wingers that could get the job done, and he's been able, or he's had to be able to only rush the net if he wants to be successful. And now it's, you know, finally this guy has someone who can dish it out to and play with. So I think that's why the trade was made, but you're totally right. Hindsight's 2020, and down the road when Dylan Gunther really becomes something, and I'm confident he will at the National Hockey League level, it's going to sting when Vancouver's paying Ekman Larson, or maybe at that point has bought him out. So we'll see.
Man. Yeah. And I mean, watch them just botch this too and be like, no, we did this because we want to be a deep team, and they throw him on the third line instead.
They won't do that.
No, they would never make poor lineup choices.
Yeah. Wait, for the most part, Travis Green, he's made good lineup choices.
You love Pearson.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, there's nobody else.
Fair enough.
All right, Hoppy. I'm excited to dive into this next topic here. To my surprise, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, you had a lot to say about this. So our friends at Everything College Hockey shared a graphic and basically posed the idea to all of us and got me all hyped up on the winners of the Memorial Cup of the CHL going head-to-head against the Frozen Four champions. What do you call it? The NCAA, just Division I champions? Is there a title for it?
Yeah, national champions.
National champions. So they proposed a three-game series between the Memorial Cup champions and the national champions, which is unbelievable. I don't think this has ever been done. No, clearly not in our lifetime, or I would have known this, Hoppy. Right away, I tweeted out that, oh, I'm all about this, but take away the full face shields and allow fighting, because that, I mean, that makes it fair, in my opinion, because that's what our CHL boys up here in Canada are used to. You pushed back and said that if that was the case, you thought that the college kids would just, you know, steamroll us. So let's get into it. First of all, would you like to see this series? And second of all, why are you so bullish on the NCAA?
Buddy, I would pay so much money to go to one of those games. You have no idea. It would be incredible. Oh, man. That would be incredible. I think the game itself would be very interesting, right?
A clash of styles, for sure, like, yep.
Like, very, very different styles. Like, way more honed in, like, fully structured game from the college players. And obviously, just a different level of offensive flair and skill coming from, you know, what we're seeing up north. For me, though, man, like, it's just men against kids. Like, it's just a different game when you're talking about some of these college guys that, shit, they might be 24 years old. Like, in the game alone, like, pushing these kids around. But then we get into what you want to talk about is, oh, I want to see all the fights. We got to allow fighting if we do this. And, yeah, there might be a couple guys that can tussle because they just know how to fight well. They get, you know, let's be real, they do it all the time. These college guys could be 6 years older than some of the guys. Like, is that even legal to beat the shit out of a kid like that?
If they beat the shit out of them. My argument is that, for the most part, players in the CHL now, and I get it, and even in the NHL too, and in all pro hockey, smaller players have found success. But for the most part in the CHL, you're already a specimen at 16, 17 years old, or they don't even bring you in. So yes, they're still, they may have, you know, some of the college players may have 6 years on some of these guys, but as far as body styles, they're pretty much up there with the men at 17 and just getting bigger. So I will say that, yeah, there's just some of that, you know, strength that comes with the end of puberty and becoming a man. But for the most part, these younger players in the CHL, and let's be honest, the teams that have the most success that go to the Memorial Cup, they have a bunch of 20 year olds on those teams. They're very much 18, 19, 20 year old heavy. And at that stage, those guys are, yeah, they're still kids, they're still teens, but they look like men. And so I think in the physicality point of view or argument there, I think it's more on the same level than you would think. And as far as the fighting, like I said this prior to recording here, every CHL club, and again, things are changing, they still have one or two quote-unquote heavyweights, guys who they're there on the fourth line, yes, to kill penalties and be defensive, but they know that they're going to answer the bell when they have to. And those guys, I think, are just a level above some of these college players who, yes, had to fight in junior A and stuff too, but for the most part aren't recruited onto a college roster for that purpose, right? So if there's a line brawl like you suggested, sure, maybe the men eat up the boys, but I doubt in this type of series that there would be a line brawl. Now, a few fights, sure, but I just don't know if we'd see that. Now, if we did, take my money. I don't really care who wins at that point. I just want to see the damn thing. But yeah, man, this is just so cool. And in my opinion, it's these type of tournaments that grow the game. Do you think that more things like this is good for the game and would grow it, especially in the United States?
I think it's good for the game. What I kind of wonder, and I'm not actually worried about this, but it's worth noting maybe, that it's not a great proposition for the CHL. They don't really gain a whole lot from it because, like, they don't need American eyes on the product, and all it's going to do is expose more Canadians to the college game. And you're already starting to see a small trickling of top tier Canadian players coming down and playing.
Well, look at Alex Newhook. You don't think he had offers to play in the dub? Holy, or even the Quebec
right.
League.
Well, and think about it too. Like, what if it's Michigan that does it, right? You got a couple of big name Canadians.
That's a good
there.
Thing.
Like
though.
It is, but it's a big pull and a big draw. I love it because it's growing college hockey then, but I can see where the leagues of the CHL might be like, I don't know, like they're probably not that worried about it, but it's something that's probably
in the back of their mind. CHL can get Canadian eyes on it on a TSN broadcast or CBC or something, I think they're all for it because then there's just some TV dollars. And I think because the CHL is not worried about their product being hampered as a result or growing anymore. The CHL is the king of junior hockey in North America. It just really is. So I don't think they're going to be dethroned anytime soon by Junior A. I just think that more people are going the Junior A route because, hell, there's more opportunities that way. There really is to get ice time on the Junior A roster and in a college program. So I would push back on it, the CHL being tentative. I think if there's TV dollars, they're in. Sure. 100%.
Sure. Yeah. Fair enough.
And
fair enough.
We've gone like 5-10 minutes on this. Like this would just be so cool. I'd love to.
Oh, for sure. And you know, there's the option here where it's, again, you take the national champions and you take the, you know, winners of the Memorial Cup and have them play in a series. But you could also go the route of having like quasi all-star teams, right? Like whether that's all NCAA and all CHL, or if we're talking WHL and then picking a conference in the NCAA, like that kind of shit could be really interesting too. And like, if it's that type of a game, maybe it's not, you know, as much of what you want, Isha, where like it's, you know,
hey, you said take the visors off too.
Oh, absolutely. No fake tough guys here.
We'll move on to our final topic. I'll let you tee this one up, Hoppy, since it is Vikings related. And just quick shout out to 10K Takes. They wrote a good piece on this too. Hashtag free 10K.
Hashtag free 10K. And hashtag free Eichel, because I'm still on that.
He's still shackled, man, for a while, more than Kaprizov.
It's such, dude, it kind of pisses me off. But we'll get into that in another episode, because I think everyone knows by now how we feel. For the Vikings, this is just the greatest thing ever. It's not great that it happened, but Everson Griffin not playing today. And again, we are recording on Sunday right before the game. Everson Griffin out with a concussion because he swerved to not hit a deer. It's just... you can't make this shit up.
Good Minnesota guy. He's like, you know, if I'm going to kill this thing, it's going to be with a rifle. It's not going to be with my car.
Yeah, man. It's, hey, big game here, though, for the Vikings, everyone. And time traveling here because, again, the game hasn't started yet. But here we go. Time travel. Wow. This is why I in no way support further investments into time travel, because right now fucking sucks. Jesus Christ. Isha, you just pick them right. I mean, this
apparently
is probably the perfect way for us to bring you into the Vikings kingdom here with what was a really exciting back and forth game. Like that was a really, really good NFL football game for you to watch. And then you got to feel exactly what every Minnesota Vikings fan typically feels leaving a football game. And that's just despair.
Yeah. Broken heart.
What are your thoughts here from your first experience?
Well, hey, it's not my first NFL game. Okay. Like I am a fan of the Seahawks, so I do watch Seahawks games every now and then, but yes, I went into this game like full on cheering for the Vikings, like all in. First, like, I guess full Vikings game that I've chosen, you know, to watch on my own, not with anybody around, because I'm sitting alone in my office right now watching it. And yeah, man, I'm heartbroken, because after a high scoring game where overall I thought like the Vikings played the better first half and overall the better game, I mean, Dalvin Cook's a fucking beast. And yeah, and at the end of it, I'm thinking, why the hell didn't I just watch a CFL game? Because at least they can kick the fucking ball.
Hey, you just hit that perfectly for me, though, because so Dom Claire on Twitter, like, immediately just comes in and it's, I don't know how much more I can take. Honestly, why do we have to always go through these types of losses with kickers? And my immediate reaction to that, Isha, is unfortunately, your new favorite player is gone, because let's just trade Dalvin Cook for Justin Tucker straight up. Never have to deal with this again. or we break Justin Tucker and prove that Vikings just can't have kickers.
So that's a thing? Vikings just have never had good kickers?
Oh, Isha.
I'm new to the Vikings world, okay?
Yes, that's a key part of Vikings history.
See, because in my world and in Seahawks history, they just don't run the fucking ball, so it's a little bit different.
Like, you should literally just type in Minnesota Vikings kickers to Google, and you can go down a dark, dark hole. It's brutal, man. It's brutal. In fact, you should just go and post that on Twitter right now, just because I want to see what reactions you can drum up. Right, we're done here. Just post something to the effect of, wow, guys, like, what a brutal miss. Like, is this a normal thing for the Vikings?
And I'm tweeting it literally right now.
Like, something to that effect. Like, I just want to see how people react.
I'm tweeting it right now. That's hilarious.
Well, tell me. So this is your, again, you've watched NFL football. You understand how the game works. First Vikings game that you've dialed into, is Kirk Cousins good?
I think he's good. Yeah, I do. I mean, based on this game, I thought he was fine. Is he outstanding? No, but I don't know. Kind of like, and maybe I'm totally off here, because this particular quarterback at one point was looked at as elite, I think, anyways, but like, I don't know, kind of Matt Ryan-esque, like, gets the job done. Not gonna not going to run the ball, not going to throw anything.
Hey, he had a massive run. He had a really big one that he broke out.
You're
right. He's not a runner. He's not.
Yeah, yeah. He's not a run first kind of guy. He's gonna pick apart the field, move up little by little, strategic, strategy there. He's got a good arm though. Like, and I don't have a problem with him. But again, I got a whole season of Kirk Cousins ahead of me.
Oh, it's gonna be lovely. And yeah, on the topic of like running quarterbacks, I was actually pleasantly surprised at how well the front four of the Vikings were containing Kyler Murray, because that dude can fucking scoot.
Dude, we talk about Marco Rossi's like legs. Like, you look at Kyler Murray's, like, holy shit, this guy's a tank for like a shorter guy, right? He's just, yeah, he's got wheels.
Yeah, he's built different for sure. But I mean, again, exciting game. Like, that's the kind of football I want to watch. I could just do without the heartbreak at the very end.
That was tough. Like, well, I said, I don't know, like, well, I was telling you before we recorded this, and we're gonna jump back into the past here in a sec and finish off the podcast, but man, like, I don't know if I can do this every week.
Well, we're gonna find out. We'll see if next week pushes you over the edge.
Well, I'm rooting for the Seahawks next week, I'm gonna be perfectly honest.
Well, good, that maybe that ends up working in our favor. But hey, Vikings, big game here. Again, underdogs. I think it's still 4 points is the line. It's going to be interesting because if they go 0-2, we're on a completely different trajectory here. And guess what? If they win, we're probably going to be seeing everyone on Twitter say they're going to the Super Bowl and how Kirk Cousins is just so incredible.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. If they lose, then we're going to hear some time travel segment there. If they win, you're just gonna troll people on Twitter.
Yeah, that's, I mean, either way the trolling will probably commence, but man, it was crazy. So one of the podcasts I listened to, they had a guy on who's explaining like his draft methodology for his fantasy teams, right?
Did,
like teams,
did he charge $100 for the appearance? Stuff.
He did not charge $100 for the appearance. Stupid. He's right? Leaving money on the table. I don't know why he wouldn't do that. Oh, that, I can't wait for Z to go off on that. Man, but so the guy's like explaining, like, yep, I don't take running backs from Minnesota because Adrian Peterson's a scumbag and he, like, you know, the whole switch incident. And so, like, they started going down this rabbit hole and he had no idea what they were, like, doing. But they just kept asking him questions like, okay, so what do you think about Aaron Hernandez? Like, he's fine, yeah. Like, they kept on going down awesome. That and, like, kept on naming different people who, like, did worse shit. That they're like, oh, what do you think about Deshaun Watson? Oh yeah, no, he's a good player. Like, and they're just like laughing, and he's like, "I don't get it."
Aaron Hernandez is fine. Oh man, well, I think that's it for the show. I mean, not too much here. We ran a little. You know, it's a big episode because we ran our friend Dave's interview there, which we caught up with him at the end of last week. And again, he's going to be jumping on the Soda Pod more and more this season, this year. I can't believe we're in the 200s now. What an accomplishment, Hoppy. Unbelievable stuff. And we have some announcements in the next couple of weeks too. We had a couple more team members joining the Soda Pod. We're really excited to have some new voices, some new faces joining the team here, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're really ramping up the hockey coverage and talk this year, eh, Hoppy?
Absolutely. No, it'll be exciting, and yeah, you'll know more soon.
That's enough for a tease on this episode. We'll come up with some more leading up to the big news. Thanks everyone tuning in to the Soda Pod episode 204 via Google, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. The best thing you do for us this week, any week, is to give us 5 stars and a kind review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. And if you want more hockey content, go listen through our website, thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. And on your app, please download the episodes before you listen, as it just helps our business. Don't forget to follow myself at VI Sports Talk. You can follow the Soda Pod at the Soda Pod. And you can follow the Hockey Podcast Network at Hockey Pod Net. Hoppy, where can they find you?
You can find me at State of Hoppy, most places.
We'll be in more energetic spirits in the next episode, folks. Hoppy won't be on the liquid IV, and I'll be beard up instead of caffeinated. But until then, signing off, I'm Isha Dromi alongside the State of Hoppy. This has been the Soda Pod presented by the Hockey Podcast Network. We good, man?
We good.
Don't fear, just drink some beer and stay wild.
Skol Vikes.